Ramsey TV.
Change and decay. Change and decay. These are two of my least favorite things. Whenever I've had to move in my life, it's traumatic. I have some post-traumatic stress reactions whenever I move. And this is because I was settled my entire life. I mean, I had lived a very stable, settled life. I was very fortunate that way. When I was born in Canton, Ohio, I lived 2 years in a small house, and then my parents moved to a house in the suburbs. The first house was in the city of Canton, Ohio, and then I lived in that house in the suburbs until I moved out in 1980. So I was there from age 2 to age 18 or 19. That's stability. And then I married a girl from Greenwich, Ohio, and I moved to the city where she lived, Greenwich, Ohio, and I lived on a farm for 25 years. So for the first almost 50 years of my life, I lived in only two locations. I am so used to and spoiled by. I am a very rare person. I hear stories of like military families and they're constantly moving. I've heard just really terrible stories about kids being uprooted, their father's job changes all the time, and they have to start at a new school. Now, I went to the same school for 8 years, my grade school, and then right across the field was my high school. I've heard of kids going from school to school to school. People have said in the first 8 years of their life, they would change schools 8 to 10 times. Even in the middle of the year, for some reason, they would have to change schools. I hate change. I love stability because I'm used to stability. But the time is coming when we will not have to suffer change anymore. Hello, everybody. Martin Zender here, providing comfort and light and a little humor thrown in. I just can't help it. I don't do it on purpose. I don't sit down and say, I think I'm going to try to say something funny today. If it comes to me, I say it. If it doesn't, I don't. You know me. But either way, I'm happy to be here with you every day. We're going to look at one of my favorite passages of scriptures, Romans 8. This has to do with change, and it also has to do with decay. Yeah, I'm not too fond of decay either. I don't know if you've noticed, but everything's in a state of degeneration. I've talked to you before about an influential teacher in my life, teacher of the truth. His name was Ray Prinzing from Boise, Idaho, and my in-laws listened to him all the time. They were groupies. They followed him and went to different conferences, and I had like hundreds of Ray Prinzing tapes, and I would put them in my car and listen to them on the way to and from the post office. That was 11 miles from Greenwich, Ohio to Willard, Ohio, and then back again. And I always remember he had some really unique intonations. He would talk about evolution, and he would say what a lie it is, and he would counteract the absurd notion that humanity is progressing and getting better and better by saying we're in a state of degeneration. Love that. Can I say it again? Would anybody mind? It's okay. Degeneration. Yeah, that's true. We're not progressing. We're degenerating. If you want to find out if evolution is true or not, pluck an apple from a tree and see what happens to it. Put a car in the woods. Check on it in 2 years. Everything's degenerating. So it's change and decay. Change and decay are two scourges that certainly are part of the baseline evil that we are born into. Pluck an apple from a tree, it begins to die. As soon as a human being comes into the world, It begins to die. Has a few good years. Hits those teenage years. Thinks it's invincible. Finds out different around the age 40. And then, so they say, it's downhill from there. I suppose that's true. I hear that the biggest regret people have is that they didn't take care of themselves throughout their glory years, and they're shocked at how long and hard old age is. Well, I hope we don't have to have too much experience with that, because change and decay for us is about to be over. I want to read my favorite passage from Scripture, which has to do with this, Romans chapter 8. I'm going to read it from the Concordant Literal New Testament. And then I'm going to read it out of the J.B. Phillips paraphrase. I only use a paraphrase if I really want to bring out the sense of something, and I only use two paraphrases. My go-to paraphrases, my first one is J.B. Phillips. My second one is The Message. The Message is really loosey-goosey. Phillips is more true to the sense. If I'm writing a book, I love to use a colloquial paraphrase, but I'll only do that if it agrees. That is, if there's no great variance between it and the literal translation. So let's go to Romans chapter 8, and then I'm going to show you two video clips that are going to illustrate for you the fix that we're in. We are in a fix. Maybe I should show you those first. Let me think about this. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read this passage, which is Romans chapter 8, verses 18 through 21. I'm going to read it from the Concordant version. Then I'm going to read it. Then I'm going to read it from the Phillips translation. Then I'm going to show you these two video clips, which really, to me, is the starkest contrast you're going to get from vivacious life, the pride of life, the energy of youth, and the results of change and decay. On second thought, I'm going to put these videos in between these two passages. Okay, here we go from the Concordant Literal New Testament, Romans 8, 18. For I'm reckoning that the sufferings of the current era do not deserve the glory about to be revealed for us. For the premonition of the I've read this hundreds of times. I love this passage. It's amazing. It's one of the most fantastic passages if we really believe it and take it literally, which of course we need to, because it is literal. The premonition of the creation is awaiting the unveiling of the sons of God. That's amazing. For to vanity was the creation subjected, not voluntarily, but because, no kidding, not voluntarily. Who the hell would sign up for this? But because of him who subjects it, in expectation that the creation itself also shall be freed from the slavery of corruption into the glorious freedom of the children of God. For we are aware, verse 22, Romans 8, that the entire creation is groaning and travailing together until now. Yet not only so, but we ourselves also, who have the first fruit of the Spirit, we ourselves also are groaning in ourselves. No kidding. I can verify that. Check. Awaiting the sonship, the deliverance of our body. Verse 24, for to expectation were we saved. Now expectation being observed is not expectation. For what anyone is observing, why is he expecting it also? Great point, Paul. Now, if we are expecting what we are not observing, we are awaiting it with endurance. There we go. Where the Concordant has slavery of corruption. I'm going to show you a stark picture of corruption. Two contrasting videos. And then I'm going to show you how the J.B. Phillips paraphrase translates the slavery of corruption. The Beatles came to America in 1964, and on February 9th, they arrived in New York, and they played on the Ed Sullivan Show. As you know, millions and millions of people watched. It was an historic moment by human standards, by Eon 3 standards, and it was the heyday of rock and roll, really. They called it the British Invasion. Well, the first actual concert that the Beatles performed was 2 days later, on February 11th. There was a big snowstorm, and they were scheduled to play at the Washington Coliseum in Washington, D.C. But they couldn't fly. All the flights were canceled, so they took a train from New York to Washington, D.C., and they put on what I think is one of the most exciting performances the Beatles ever played. Again, this was their first concert in America. I'm going to show you clips from that now. I'm okay using this music. I don't know. The Beatles are kind of picky about it. If I get an email from Paul or Ringo, I'm just going to have to do something different. But let's see how it goes. This is February 11th, 1964, the Washington Coliseum in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Wow. I saw you jump, my head is set. Saw a Mary coming in the back of the alley, oh baby. Yeah, baby. Ooh, baby. Somebody John, my head is there. So America.
Wow. Just talk about change. Talk about decay. Talk about that era is gone. And by the way, that era is gone. There will never be another band like the Beatles. Something happened then. I told you before, some spiritual movement in heaven, in the celestial realm, produced the 60s here. It was the beginning of the end. It started with a great flourish of creativity, much like the Renaissance, really. People were loosed in a good way and in a bad way also. It degenerated into what we have today, where you have the hippies, the people who are all for free love and free speech, are suddenly against free speech. And they who at one time were criticizing the man, now they are the man. All that is very sad, but all these things must happen at the time of the end, and we are at the time of the end. But to see, to feel the loss, those two videos, you can really feel the loss, the change, the hopelessness. And it's really a picturesque way of illustrating the era that we're in, isn't it? That's what happens. That's what we've gone from that to this. And now, before you get too despairing, I know it's very depressing. I was depressed when I saw it. It's weird, just weird. Now, from the J.B. Phillips paraphrase, Romans chapter 8, verses 18 through 25. In my opinion, whatever we may have to go through now is less than nothing compared with the magnificent future God has planned for us. The whole creation is on tiptoe to see the wonderful sight of the sons of God coming into their own. The world of creation cannot as yet see reality, not because it chooses to be blind, but because in God's purpose it has been so limited. Yet it has been given hope. That's the one word I really don't like here. Concordant has expectation, much better than hope, but let's ride with it. And the hope is that in the end, the expectation. I'm just going to substitute expectation for hope. Okay, thank you. I just wanted to explain that. And the expectation is that in the end, the whole of created life will be rescued from the tyranny of change and decay. There it is. The tyranny. Concordant called it the slavery to corruption. But I love this. The tyranny of change and decay. Change is tyrannical. Decay is tyrannical. It breaks you down like the Washington Coliseum is broken down. And all those exciting times and all the hopes and dreams you had back in 1964 or 1984 or 1994, whenever you were born, or 2004, they slowly fade. They slowly become cobwebby and drippy and smelly and decrepit. And it's a very sad thing. And this is what J.B. Phillips calls the tyranny of change and decay. So the expectation is that in the end, the whole of created life will be rescued from the tyranny of change and decay and have its share in that magnificent liberty which can only belong to the children of God. Verses 23 through 25 now, it is plain to anyone with eyes to see that at the present time, all created life groans in a sort of universal travail. And it is plain, too, that we who have a foretaste of the Spirit are in a state of painful tension while we wait for that redemption of our bodies, which will mean that at last we have realized our full sonship in Him. We were saved by this expectation, but in our moments of impatience, let us remember that expectation always means waiting for something that we haven't yet got. But if we expect for something we cannot see, then we must settle down to wait for it in patience. And may God grant us more of that patience, which is a fruit of the Spirit. But we don't just hope for this deliverance from change and decay. We are expecting it.